My name is Veronika Yerumes, and today we have a guest from AmCham Ukraine, my colleague Valeria Lysenko, a junior policy officer responsible for IT and personal data protection issues. I'm very happy. Thank you for being with us today, Valeria, and welcome.
Hi, Veronica. Thank you so much for inviting me and having me here. And thank you for being ready to spread our story and to spread the truth about what's happening in Ukraine.
We're very happy that you're here, and I appreciate, and I'm on behalf of my entire team, very grateful that you're willing to share your stories. I think it is important that people in Slovakia, but maybe other listeners around Europe or elsewhere who might listen to this podcast, know what is happening in Ukraine and how does it feel to live under the Russian aggression in the country. So thank you for being with us and looking forward to our conversation. Let me start with the first question. Probably you remember February 24th better than any other day. If you could describe for us the first days of war and how it felt on the 24th, man, maybe some of the first few days.
Sure. I think February 24th is a day that all the Ukrainians will remember forever. And for me, it started with my mom waking me up with her like voice in panic and saying, "Wake up, we gotta pack." And first, it was around 6 a.m. in the morning, and first things, you have to wake up, you have to understand like what is really going on. But a few seconds later, I see that it was no joke, and my mom was really scared and panicking. And so we started to pack, but here's the thing. On February 23rd, the day earlier, my dad came home really late, and he was anxious, and he said, "Pack everything, pack all the emergency backpacks, and I will go and put gas and fuel in the car." And my dad does not tend to panic a lot. So for me, that was a sign that, not that he knows something, but something is about to happen, because we have been having those rumors about the war starting for weeks by then. And we started to pack, and I have two younger brothers and I have two cats. So that packing took us some time, because you need to make sure you have everything ready for everyone. And so, yeah, we packed that and we put it to the wall in the hall, and let's just go to sleep and see. So the next morning it happened, the war happened, something that we all were not expecting and probably scared of the most. And so we woke up, we are looking at our bags packed, and we're like, okay, so what should we do? And I think, and I was talking to a lot of friends and people, and I think that was the situation that a lot of Ukrainians faced that morning. Okay, we packed our stuff, so what do we do now? Where do we go? Yeah, we have some relatives in Lviv, and we have some relatives in Uzhgorod region. It was very close to Hungarian border, but we never pre-made the agreement that we will come to them. So, but we knew they will not refuse to host us for some time, but still. So I was insisting that we stay in Bucha. That's where I'm from and that's where I live. I said, it's Kyiv region, nothing's going to happen here. They will not, like, there's no way they go through our city, through our town and reach Kyiv, like, no way. So I said, this is the first day, everyone is panicking, let's just stay here and wait and see. But my dad said that we have this Hostomel airport that I think everyone also knows of, and we have it pretty much like 3 kilometers away from us. So he said, this will be a hot spot, like, I'm telling you. And I was, no, there is no way, that airport is old, no one even knows about it, let's just not make a big deal out of it, let's just stay here and check the news and see what happens. Because I live close to the highway, which is called like Warsaw Highway, and since 7 a.m. we were watching a lot of lines and cars that way. So it was already full with the cars. So I said it will take us days to get to the western side of Ukraine. So we decided to stay there.
Wow. So just for the listeners, you are staying in Bucha for the first few days. For those maybe who haven't heard of the city or have no idea, it is next to Irpil and probably one of those and close to Kiev. So it became actually one of the most known cities, not only in Ukraine, but in Europe and around the world because of the fights that were taking place in the close proximity and of what happened in Bucha. So Valeria, can you describe, you stayed, you mentioned the first 2 weeks in Bucha. So basically when the Russian army arrived. So describe how it felt, how does the city look like today? What happened in the closest Irpil place and how you managed to live the first 2 weeks in one of the most targeted areas in Ukraine?
Yeah, so Bucha was invaded on February 27th. That's when we woke up, when like we really woke up from explosions happening in Bucha. And I could see from my window that the center of Bucha was, there was something burning there. And we started to share with the people that I know, my friends who are also in Bucha, we started to share pictures like, what happened? Do you have any information? Because we all are spread around the city, the town. And so, yeah, there was the first building hit in Bucha on February 27th. And starting from then, the town was occupied. And that's where it really became scary because, you know, they're in your town, you can see them from your window, all the military, the Russian military, and all the armor and stuff. So that's where it was very, very scary because I think the day before, maybe 2 days before, we heard the news that the bridge that connects Bucha and Kiev, the bridge that we used to use to go to Kiev, it was damaged, it was broken by our army so that they cut the way for Russian military to reach Kiev. So and from the other side, we could go to Kiev from Irpin, but we heard that Irpin was also occupied or that the fighting was happening there. So it was really dangerous to leave Bucha at that point. So a few days after that, the water was cut off and we didn't have any water. And one of the craziest memories that I have from Bucha, I think it was March 1st when we didn't have water for 1 or 2 days already, and it was snowing. In the morning, it started snowing, and I looked out from my window to see like how bad it's snowing. And I see my neighbors from the building that I live in. They went out onto the yard with their buckets, and they're collecting snow. And this is something that just you cannot imagine happening in the 21st century. So they're collecting snow and carefully to make sure it's not. It's not dirty or something. They're collecting snow to make sure they have at least some water for their needs. It's crazy. And so a few days after that, because of my building being on the highway, very close to highway, we knew that this will be the road used by Russian army to go to Kiev in case of it'll happen. So I thought I will be hit for sure. And my dad had a friend who has his private house in a forest area. So that's where he made agreement that we'll move there. So we went there. But that building, that house is not really ready for living there. So we were staying in a basement. And we were lucky to have a well where we can take water from. We were happy. We were lucky to have the fireplace where we could cook something because from the first days of March we didn't have any water, and a few days after that the gas was also cut off, so there was no way you could do something. So I could say we were happy, but at that point then we didn't have any connection, I didn't know service. It was really hard to reach some friends or some relatives, and I also have my grandparents staying in the city.
How are you at this point? Like, no water, no gas, no electricity, or was it internet that you had no connection? What did you guys, did you have, you probably had some supplies that were still lasting, or how did you, I cannot even imagine, like, what were the, you had two younger brothers, you said, what did, I don't know, like, how did you, what did you eat? Where were your grandparents safe? Or, I mean, that's crazy.
We can say a huge thank you to our mayor of Bucha, because we had humanitarian aid through all this time. So we were able to walk to the city hall and get some food from there. But we didn't really go there because we had everything. We had everything we need, some rice and some meat and stuff like that. And I also always buy food for my cats in advance, and I make sure I have a lot of food. So I was happy, like, to have everything they need to eat by the time the war started. So it wasn't a big problem. And we still had some supermarket open where we could go and buy some food, but the variety was not that bad. But you have no choice. It's not about deciding do I like this or not. You just get food because you need it anyways. And so we were staying in the private house. We were staying like three families and 11 people in total and three cats. And so everyone was, when it was a suitable situation, when you hear less explosions than yesterday, we would go to our apartment to get some more food that was left, because we had some frozen meat and some frozen vegetables and stuff. But by the time we were leaving Bucha, we had nothing left in our fridge at home. We had some supplies in that private house, but
was it safe to? As no. You say, was it safe to go to your house and get the frozen meat or vegetables? Like, or were you risking every time your life that, I don't know, some kind
every
of
time we're risking every day. So every time, so it would take us about 2 hours to walk to the apartment and go back to the safe house that we were staying at. And one day, my parents went there, and they were not coming back for almost 3 hours. So that's where I was really, really scared and worried. And well, you start to get worried once they leave that safe place, obviously. But I couldn't reach out to them through the phone because there was no service. And I was like, you know, having the worst scenarios in my head. But then they came back and I could see my mom's face was so scared. I'm like, what happened? And they say, so we are crossing this road with my father, my dad and my mom. So we're crossing this road and then we hear like one shot. And they were like, my dad was like, let's run. So they are running. And he said, what he said to me is, they're trying to cross this road and there is no one else there. But they saw the armed vehicle of Russians staying at like 100 meters from them. So my dad was like, let's walk peacefully. We're not intending to do anything bad. We're just civilians. We're walking. So they start walking, and that's where they hear the shot. They were super lucky to not get wounded then, but it was like, why would you do that? You see two civilians just walking, having nothing in their hands, no weapon. Why would you shot at them?
That's crazy. I mean, this is, I think, one of the examples of war crimes, when you just see innocent civilians walking without any weapon and you start shooting just without any reason. That's crazy. So you stayed, you said the first few days, 2 weeks in Bucha, and then you moved to this house of your friends. Where did your steps lead further? I mean, did you stay, was it safe enough? Or you said that by the time you were leaving, there was no more food left. So did you move elsewhere? Did you go to another city, or how was it? What were your further steps?
So yeah, we stayed about 2 days in that house. It was pretty safe there, although we heard a lot of like sounds, the war sounds, and it was really hard to sleep and stuff like that. But we heard from the radio. We could still sometimes catch the radio signal, and we heard that there was an evacuation happening in Irpin, the neighbor town. So we're like, okay, let's hope we'll have some evacuation from Bucha as well, because we, like, there is no way you can stay here and be safe. So the 9th of March is where the first evacuation was announced, but the buses that were supposed to come, they didn't arrive. And me and my dad, the next day, March 10th, we were walking to the city hall to check the whole situation, to understand what is happening, because we have a car, so we could go by car, if it's allowed. And so we went there, we're talking to people, we have some friends from city hall who know the overall situation, and they said, yeah, the buses didn't arrive yesterday, but a lot, around like 50 cars, civilian cars, they broke through and they got to Kiev safely. So we're like, okay, this is our chance to do that. So we decided to go back, pack everything we had. We didn't have any chance to go back to our apartment to grab something more because the time was running up. You never know, like, is it good time to go there? Probably not. We'll just whatever we had, but we had some winter clothes. And me personally, when I found out that we will go to our friend's house to stay there in the basement, I took all the old stuff because, you know, you don't want to get dirty. And why would you need jeans or something fancy there, right? So you take all the bad clothes. That's what I was leaving Bucha with. And
You said that the bridge was damaged, so going to Kiev, you couldn't take the short route. So you ended up going through Irpin.
Not even Irpin. Here's the thing: Irpin is connected to Kiev with a highway. It doesn't have any bridges. You can cross it. So with Bucha, it was complicated. So it took us about 2 or 3 hours if you go without any lines. It will take 2 or 3 hours to go from Bucha to Kiev when it normally would take 30 minutes with a car. So we didn't go through Irpin. There was this, I think it's a village called Bilogorodka. So we had to make a huge circle to get to Kiev.
Okay, so now you're in Kiev. And is this where you're still currently at the moment in Kiev, right? So you managed to get to Kiev, and since that March 10th, you are basically in Kiev, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. There is only one thing that I want to add, if I may. So the day we were leaving Bucha, we stayed in a convoy with a civilian's car. So we are driving slowly, and at some point at the crossroads, the convoy stops. And we see like 5 or 6 armed vehicles of Russians. They're coming through the convoy, and I think we could hear the silence of everyone in this convoy because, we heard all about the atrocities by the day already, and we saw some dead bodies and burned cars with civilians inside. We saw it in our town at the beginning of March. So we stopped, and they went through. They didn't shot anyone. And, after that, I was talking to my brother. He's 12 years old. And I thought, like, what did you feel at that moment when you saw those armed vehicles? And you probably understand this, like, there is a big chance you might be killed. And he said, yes, I was very scared when I saw them. And you know what I thought? I thought 12 years is not enough for life. I was feeling bad because I would die so young, and I didn't do anything, and I didn't see that much as I wanted to, and this is just crazy. Like when you hear that from a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's so sad. I mean, so many lives. Affected in Ukraine, and to hear these stories that even such a young boy realizes. That his life might have been in a second over. I'm so glad that you guys made it and you are alive and safe. But how many people either in Bucha or in Irpin or in other cities around Ukraine were not that lucky and did not make it. I mean, people should just maybe think for a minute and realize what is going on, and if they can in any way help, whether it's supporting financially, materially, spread the word, convince a friend who doesn't think that there is a war in Ukraine, just take a minute and contribute in any way they can help. I think it would help the whole situation and see the war end as soon as possible. Valeria, I'm so thankful that you're sharing it and that it is your personal story from a region, from a city that that experienced firsthand the war. I'm glad you're currently safe. How does your work or life look alike today? Do you were part of AmCham, or you're part of AmCham and the team? I know that you are trying to support your members, and you work in to an extent that the situation allows. If you could share, like, how does your work look like, or your everyday life look like in Ukraine as you are currently in Kiev, and at the moment, thanks God, there is no Russian soldiers at the moment, and they withdrew. So Kiev, at what it seems to be at the moment safe. So how is life now for you these days?
So yeah, after we evacuated from Bucha, and I went to stay in Western Ukraine with my relatives for some time. Then I got back with my dad to Kiev, and this is where I'm currently staying. And there is no enough words for to express my gratitude to AmCham Ukraine and our team, who've been worrying about me the whole time I stayed in Bucha. And our HR manager, Anyuta, was always trying to reach out to me. And whenever she would get a message that I'm online, and I mean, not online, but that I have some service, so she would call me the second, and she was asking how me and my family are doing. And all the support that we receive from AmChams all over the world is amazing, and we are super grateful for that and for all the support. And right now I'm trying to work as much as I can given the circumstances that business is trying to operate, and we're trying to support Ukrainian government's initiatives as well and contribute as much as we can as one of the biggest business associations. Pretty much it. Well, I volunteer at the same time on my days off and the weekends. So we have this kitchen that where we cook some food for the soldiers that come to Kiev from rotation. And overall, yeah, try to contribute to the victory and contribute to the bright future from all the sides that I can. And work is remote right now. Well, we used to have it remote before the war as well. So there is no difficulties in this transformation for us. But even given the fact that some of our employees are outside of the country, we could still see that everyone is working, everyone is contributing as much as they can to make sure the business could operate and business can get the support they ask for.
I mean, it's super cool to see that despite of the situation, you are trying to support a business, support your country, as you say, that you're basically volunteering to help on the weekends or whenever you can. So it is inspiring. Thanks to this strength that you as a nation show, you cooperate, you work together to achieve a certain goal. I think it's amazing to see. I mean, even from the first days of your president showing bravery and strength, and then you as a nation coming when he called all the men that are able to come and support your country, that so many, even people from abroad, came back. I think it's such a brave example to the Europe, to entire world, of how a country should act once this kind of situation. So, I mean, I cannot say enough admiration words towards you, your team, your country. I would just maybe wish best of luck to you, Valeria. Thank you for sharing your story with us, for being with us today. And hopefully one day, I don't know, maybe we'll meet in person sometimes. We're recording this over online in cloud, but please stay safe. Thank you again for being with us and best of luck, Valeria. Lovely to talk to you.
Same here. Thank you so much. And just thank you to the whole world. Thank you to MCM Slovakia for always being ready to share as much information about Ukraine as you can. And just thank you for all the support that we have. We will win and Ukraine will be united and we will have a bright, amazing future jointly with all the European countries. Thank you.
Thank you. And Slava Ukraine, we say
in Slovak. Slava. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.